All right. Okay.
I found a way. Alex Haley, I don't know if you ever heard that name.
No.
He's the author of the book Roots. And the movie.
Roots, yeah.
Where he was the author, very well known. He also wrote the autobiography of Malcolm X.
Oh, really?
Yes. Well, he spent 20 years in the Coast Guard. And he was our first journalist in the Coast Guard. They created the journalist specialty just for him because he was so good. Well, I was in charge of the Black History Month ball that year. Mm. And I says, I've got to get this lady's attention. And she was ignoring me. I'd get on the elevator, she'd get off. I'd go in the cafeteria, she'd go out the other door. Because she said, I don't know if I want to mess with him. Well, I asked her to be the person to introduce Alex Haley at our Black History Month ball. And she just thought, well, how can I turn that down? She didn't know that later on we would date that night. And the rest was history.
That's cute. So what has been your greatest accomplishment?
Wow. I can think of both personal and professional. My most greatest personal accomplishment was raising my son when his mother left, coincidentally, when he was 3 years old.
Oh.
Same age I was when my father left.
Oh.
And so I raised him all those years. And I think he turned out pretty well.
Yeah.
Omari is very, very special to me. So that was one of my greatest personal accomplishments, other than finding the love of my life, Shirley. Professional, I was quite surprised and shocked that I started out in the military as an enlisted person, with having no thought of ever being able to reach one of the highest ranks in the military. So to go from an enlisted seaman to retiring as a 2-star admiral was a big accomplishment. And I thought that accomplishment was the end of it. And just as I was about to retire, I was asked to run the White House by President Bush.
Oh.
And then I stayed when President Obama came. So I've been blessed.
Amen. Wait, how was that like working in the White House?
I was awestruck. Every day I went through those wrought iron gates to think that I would be running the House for the President of the United States.
Amazing.
With 95 full-time staff and 250 to 300 part-time staff. Whoa. The chefs, the carpenters, the engineers, the curators, the historians, you name it, the housekeepers, the executive chef. I mean, that was a pretty awesome job that I had no clue. In fact, when President Bush interviewed me in the Oval Office, he says, well, Admiral, what do you think about this title, being a chief usher? And, you know, to myself, I says, you know, that doesn't sound very glorifying to me. But I didn't tell him that. I said, well, Mr. President, what's in the title? To think that one day I might be working for the President of the United States, I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is.
And the next day, President Bush called the personnel office to tell him that he wanted me to take the job. And they called me, and they said, the President wants you to take the job, but he wants you to change the title for the first time in history.
Wow.
And so I changed it to Director of the Executive Residence. And the historians added, and Chief Usher. I couldn't get rid of that title. It was a great, great place to work.
And what was it like meeting Obama? President Obama?
Well, you know, thanks to President George Bush, George W. Bush, and First Lady Laura Bush, they wanted me to be the first to welcome the first black president to the White House. And so I have a wonderful picture of me shaking hands with President-elect Obama.
Oh.
4 days after the election was over, he came to visit the sitting president.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bushes wanted me to be the first one to welcome him to the White House.
That must be such an honor.
It was. It was. And I, to this day, I keep looking at that photograph of the five of us, the two first families, and myself, as he came into the entrance of the diplomatic reception.
That must have been an amazing time.
That was pretty neat. But he was a pleasure to walk to the Oval Office every single morning. When he woke up in the morning, he went to the gym first in the residence. And he would come downstairs to the elevator, and I was right at the elevator and walked him over to the Oval Office every morning.
Wow.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
So what was your job? What were you?
Well, I ran the staff.
Oh, okay.
That took care of the president's mansion.
Wow.
From top to bottom.
Ooh, that's a big... I hear there's like 300 rooms or something.
Yeah, yeah. Total, it was 200,000 square feet.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it was truly a mansion.
Yeah. And I heard about like the bowling alley in the basement.
I had a private bowling alley, a little small bowling alley in the basement. When the Obamas finally moved to the White House, I took Sasha and Malaya to see the bowling alley.
Aww.
And they were quite thrilled that they would have their own private bowling alley. He also wanted his own basketball court.
Oh, yeah. I remember seeing that on TV.
Yeah, I was the one that had the tennis court restriped to be a dual-purpose tennis court and basketball court. And I had brand-new Spalding basketball goals made especially for him that said the White House. And he bugged me every morning. I'd walk over and say, "Admiral, how's my hoops coming?" I'd say, "Well, Mr. President, you know, it takes some time." And he would say, "This is not rocket science." And I remember I didn't say anything when I knew that the basketball goals would be erected that day. And sure enough, he asked me. He says, "Admiral, how's my hoops?" I said, "Sir, at 11:30, they're going to be up."
Ooh.
At 11:15, he was out popping strings on the basketball court. And also, Mrs. Obama wanted to plant a fresh garden.
Oh, yeah.
With herbs and vegetables and all that. So I hope pull that together for her.
Oh, that's been such an honor.
Yeah.
So what life lesson helped you a lot when you were growing up and still to this day?
Wow, that's a big question. And I probably could think of so many. But I think growing up in a household that I grew up in with my mother and my grandfather was honesty. Honesty, hard work, and treating people right.
That's important.
Because I had firsthand in front of me people that lived that, and so I held on to that throughout my professional career. It's to treat everyone special, regardless of how, you know, minimal of a job they may have, they were special, and to always be honest.
That's really good. So what was it like when you voted for the first time? Do you remember?
Oh, wow. Let's see. That's a really great question. I've got to really think about that one. It
it had to be when I was likely 18 years old. And I really can't remember which president or which mayor it was back then. Maybe I was 21. But I've never missed an opportunity to vote since then.
Oh, really? Cool.
Never did, because I thought that was one of the civic responsibilities that we should take serious.
Mm-hmm.
You can't complain if you don't go and try to have some impact, even by that one vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I was fairly young, but very proud to finally go in that voting booth.
Do you remember who you were with?
I think I may have gone by myself, but that's a really good question. I have to really think about that. Because I don't think I actually went with my mother. If I think about it, I went into boot camp in the Coast Guard right my second year of college. So I would have been 20 years old then.
Oh, okay.
20, 21. And I believe I did, my first vote was for the mayor of New Orleans.
Hmm.
And I can't remember who that may have been back then. No, I'm just too far back.
So, what branch I know you, the Coast Guard. So what motivated you to choose the Coast Guard?
That's a great question, because I didn't know beans about the Coast Guard. In fact, I wasn't really pro-military.
Really?
In joining the military. Back then, I was sort of a quasi conscientious objector. That was during the time where there was, I think, a bit of protest about the Vietnam War.
Oh, yeah.
And so I wasn't an active protester, but I wasn't a supporter of us going over to Vietnam. And what motivated me was I received a letter one day from the what they call the U.S. Selective Service.
Oh.
And it said, "Greetings. You ought to report to your Selective Service to serve in the military, to sign up for the draft." And I said, "Oh, my God." You know, I'm in college. And I have to admit, back then I was making pretty average grades. I think my other two college buddies, who are still best friends now,
mm-hmm.
we played too much in school. We got the C's.
Uh-huh.
We weren't striving for B's and A's. And they were really drafting people pretty heavily. And my first cousin was already in the Coast Guard Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "Before you allow them to draft you into the Army, go talk to a Coast Guard recruiter downtown mm-hmm. on Canal Street." And so I took his advice, and I walked into that recruiting office. There was this tall African-American gentleman. Mm-hmm. Storekeeper First Class, Henry Dilworth.
Mm.
And he had these red stripes on his sleeve and these hash marked red marks on his on the bottom of his sleeves, and bell bottoms and piping around his collar white. I said, "Whoa." I said, "He looks pretty sharp." And he talked to me about the Coast Guard, and mm-hmm. he says, "There's not a lot of us in Vietnam. There's a chance you could be stationed there, but minimum chance of doing that."
Mm-hmm.
And because of my cousin, telling me to go there first. And because of my recruiter, Petty Officer Dilworth, I signed up and went to boot camp.
Was that hard?
Boot camp was tough. Mm. Yeah, boot camp was tough. They pushed you to your limit, both physical and mental.
Oh.
But I came out a stronger person.
Oh, that's good.
And I went directly to a ship. We call them cutters in the Coast Guard. I went to a Coast Guard cutter, a buoy tender.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of those.
Yeah, so my first 2.5 years was on a ship out of Oregon on the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, so did you go to Vietnam?
No, because I was in the Coast Guard. We had patrol boats in Vietnam.
Oh.
But I wasn't called. I could have gone, but had I joined the Army, I would have definitely been in Vietnam, because everybody in the Army was going over.
Mm-hmm.
But we had so few patrol boats in the Coast Guard over there. A lot of my friends went, but I went to a buoy tender, and then from there, I went to Officer Candidate School.
So what was your favorite part about being in the Coast Guard?
Oh, geez. There's just so many things I can tell you. I really enjoyed being in command. I was given my first command in my hometown of New Orleans.
Really?
20-something years later after joining. And that was a thrill of being in charge of all shipping on the Mississippi River.
Oh, really?
All the commercial ships. And we had a major oil spill. And that spilled over 500,000 gallons of crude oil in the Mississippi River, killing pelicans and sea life and everything. Mm-hmm. And with the great crew that I had, we broke a record of recovering all that oil in record time.
Really? Ooh.
And opened up the shipping channels for all the commercial ships. And I think it was under 10 days, which was a record.
Huh.
And I think that probably helped me get selected a couple years later for Admiral.
So was that like,
getting selected?
Mm-hmm.
I was in disbelief, because very few enlisted people, prior enlisted people, get to the point of making it to the Admiral level in the Coast Guard. So I didn't expect it. I thought I was going to probably retire in New Orleans. And they had other plans for me.
So what did you do as Admiral?
Well, my first tour of duty, I was in personnel. I ran the Coast Guard's personnel management program.
Mm-hmm.
And a few other things. I was the first Coast Guard flag intelligence professional. So I ran the intelligence program for the Coast Guard, and which was really a great, because it meant that I traveled around the world quite a bit. And then from there, went to Norfolk. And ran the operation down in Norfolk, which was a lot of travel. Even got to visit on every coast, African coast.
Oh, really?
That was actually before, because that was part of my training once I made Admiral.
Oh, to go around?
Yeah, they call it capstone program.
Oh.
And you could choose whether it be Europe or South America. This was the first time that they included Africa.
Mm.
And I says, I want to go to the motherland. So, yeah, I went to Senegal and South Africa, Cape Town, Pretoria, Djibouti, Morocco.
Mm. Wow, those are beautiful places.
Yeah, so I made it all the way around. So that was pretty neat.
That's so nice. So, What is the funniest memory you've ever had?
The fun?
Funniest.
Oh, the funniest memory. Wow. Whew. I've done so many professional things. I'm trying to think about that. That's really a good one. What is the funniest thing that I, memory that I've ever had? Huh. I have to think about that one a little bit. That's a tough one. I've actually had a lot of fun memories. One was with Shirley before we were even married. And at the ball, there's a picture of us. We're supposed to be very professional. We were on the dais in black tie tuxedo and ball gown. And they had us laughing and having a good time with Alex Haley on the podium. And we just having a blast. God, there was just so many other fun times. It's hard to pinpoint one. Mm. Other than that, you know, being with my son Omari, we had some really fun times and great laughs. Hadn't thought about that. That's a really good question. I may have to sink in a little bit, see what really stands out. So, I have to think about that for a second.
So, what is some advice you would like to give me?
Well, I think the first thing that comes to mind, Abina, is work hard in school and get the best grades you can possibly get.
I will.
I mean, that is a stepping stone to a lot of other great things that will come after that, including college. Mm-hmm. And have that as the next number one goal on your list is just don't stop in school here, but think of going to one of the best universities that you can, and do interviews of other people, because you get some ideas of what discipline you want to go into.
Yeah.
Whether it be engineering or business or accounting or sociology or whatever, is to really, you know, talk to other people and the experiences they had, how much did they enjoy. Also worry about, you know, economically, mm-hmm. and what's going to pay well to raise a family, to have a great job, and be a great example for your children to follow.
Thank you. So what, do you have any goals you still want to accomplish or anything?
Yeah, there is. I do have one major goal and a couple other goals. One, I want to make sure my grandchildren do well. Mm-hmm. And anything that I can do to help them financially to succeed. So making good investments, mm-hmm. so that there's a nest egg that could help them even long after I'm gone. Mm-hmm. You know, my son has always been, you know, number one on my list. And so that's why there's a daily, even more than daily, to make sure he's doing okay and he's raising his family. Making sure my mother continues to live a full life, a happy life, even at 93 years old.
Yeah.
Making sure my wife is happy and happy with me and I'm doing the right thing. But one of my other big goals is to finish writing my book.
Ooh.
I've been writing a book for a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. And I need to get that done. I've had some little setbacks, you know, with some family issues, with kids passing and things like that. Oh, but yeah. Still, I've been working on these gentlemen here. That's a picture of some of them right here on the wall.
Oh, the...
And this P. Allen gentleman here, he was the first African-American to run a life-saving station in the Coast Guard.
Ooh.
But back then it was called the U.S. Life-Saving Service. So I'm writing his story and his six gentlemen that's standing next to him.
Ooh.
That's Richard Etheridge. And he's my historic hero.
Oh, is he still alive?
Oh, no. This was in the 1800s.
Oh.
He was the first ever to lead a life-saving service station on Outer Banks in North Carolina. And I've been researching them for 29 years.
Oh.
I've spoken about them countless times all over the country.
Really? Ooh.
And I've got all my chapters together. I've got most of them somewhat written, but I'm working with an agent, a literary agent, to get that done. So that's a goal of mine, is to get that done, hopefully within the next year or so.
Ooh, I'm looking forward to read that.
And get it published.
Wait, so what's the story about that?
Well, those are the same gentleman.
Oh, really?
This is a painting. Well, there is another little story about that. That painting, it shows three of the surfmen that worked for him, and those three are on the smaller picture next to Richard Etheridge.
Mm-hmm.
But this was one of their most famous rescues. And you see the little white child?
Yeah.
They once thought that was a little girl, three-year-old girl, but that three-year-old girl's name was Thomas. I found out later it was Thomas. It wasn't a little girl. And the way I found out, when I stumbled upon their story, when I was a speaker at one of the first Black History Month balls for the Coast Guard, they wanted me to speak, and I said, what do you want me to speak about? And I went in the historian's office at Coast Guard headquarters, and he pulls out a folder, and their pictures fell out. And this white child, later, I found the family.